with people in order to understand how to effectively manage change or even drive ideas to the finish line, you have to have those conversations, or as we say, the dialogues, to truly understand what motivates a specific individual.
Meet Shibu, who is Senior Vice President of People, Culture and Infrastructure at one of the world's most respected centers devoted exclusively to cancer patient care, research, education and prevention. As a member of the advisory board for the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD, Shibu plays a key role in working with program leadership to keep the Executive Masters targeted on the realities of the changing workplace. When he and I spoke, he talked about what this means for how organizations, leaders, and HRD professionals approach change, and especially the people side of change. Here's Shibu again.
We're no longer trying to get from point A to point B. I think what's happening in the world now is that there's so much changes that are happening all around us that there is no B. I mean, there's not even a point C or a point D. It's just constantly moving. So you have to get the masses comfortable with the changing environment. But whatever that solution may be for the next month, also letting them know that you may have to change again to whatever's next after that. So it's really keeping people focused, energetic, but at the same time, letting them be involved. So with dialogic change, you continue to evolve through the dialogue with this ever-changing workplace landscape that we speak of. And I think this is why really the whole learning around human resources is becoming more pertinent these days, because every organization is putting more emphasis on the people aspect of the job rather than just the process or getting things accomplished or the products. It's really the people that actually implement the process and move the product. So when organizations start to think that their people are the main focus of an organization, things like dialogic change become so important for organizations to master, because now you have to not only know that people are the focus, but understand the people and what makes them motivated.
Welcome to Executive HRD. I'm your host, Darren Short, and in this series of 10 episodes, we're lifting up the hood and looking inside of the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD to explore what it means to undertake an HRD Masters and to surface some of the expected and unexpected benefits. Along the way, we meet current and former students and faculty members, as well as others involved in the program, to learn about what makes the University of Houston program so special as it celebrates its 10-year anniversary. Already in the series, we've heard about the design of the program, benefits for students and alumni as well as their organizations, and about the important role that cohorts play. In our last episode, we heard from students, alumni, and faculty about the program's focus on change leadership, and specifically about the difference between change management and change leadership, the importance of having multiple change tools, about emotional reactions to change, and the importance of engaging people in the change process. In this episode, we look deeper into the people side of change by examining the importance of dialogic change processes and why dialogic change is important for leaders and HRD professionals. To do that, we'll meet a current student, a former student, and three faculty members, as well as hear again from advisory board member Shibu. Together, we'll look at the difference between dialogic and diagnostic change, why dialogic is important to HRD professionals, what makes dialogic change so impactful in a diverse workplace with complex problems, how diagnostic is covered in the Executive Masters, and the benefits of studying and then applying dialogic processes. We started this episode hearing from an advisory board member, Shibu, and we'll hear more from him again later. First, though, let's hear from Toby, a member of the Executive Masters faculty who teaches dialogic organization development. Here's Toby explaining the difference between dialogic and diagnostic change.
The diagnostic component is often taking an objective stance with quotes around it. We really often depend in our thinking about issues or problems to look for a scientific mindset for how to both think about them as well as come up with solutions or address them. And so when we look at diagnostic organization development, it's very similar in terms of that frame. So we're really thinking in terms of the ways in which we can use the traditional notion of data, which is often quantitative, and a problem-solving orientation, which is often about an expert divining the problem and the question through engaging or sometimes even not engaging, just being the subject matter expert and being relied upon in terms of bringing in a scientific or a evidence-based approach. What we invite in the dialogic is to look at the constructivist perspective, the interpretive perspective, noticing that different people have different experiences and respecting and being open to a variety of perspectives before coming to conclusions. This kind of looking at the shared reality or the shared perspective, really looking at the issue from the standpoint of an interpretive perspective. So really looking at a more text-based, interaction-based approach to thinking through an organization issue, and really depending at least as much on, if not sometimes more, on processes and the way in which participants and depending on the issue, a broad swath of stakeholders may look at a particular focus of a OD intervention. So we're looking a lot more at, as dialogic implies, trying to think about organization development skills from a dialogue perspective. So really upping the side of organization development where we're asking both practitioners and any change leader to be thinking in terms of their capacity for thinking through and developing skills that are about opening possibilities and opening discussion, learning in a way that isn't necessarily about setting up the question up front and looking for the answer through data analysis, but looking at the participants around an issue or around the functional area that we'd be talking about in terms of engaging that. So on the one hand, you have in diagnostic a sometimes removed sort of scientific lens historically, and in dialogic, an engaged exchange perspective where there really is a lot of focus on learning through both techniques as well as just plain old skill development. In managing change through discussion, through structured and unstructured engagement that isn't the kind of quantitative that we often see. When we start to look historically at all the management exploration of what makes good leaders over time, and certainly good change leaders, that ability to relate is what we're seeing over and over again. So we're seeing it in other concepts like transformational leadership. We're seeing it in feedback systems where we're trying to understand in high potential programs and organizations, what we're both looking for as well as understanding from feedback is this level of dialogic capacity, I'll call it, and really this willingness to engage in understanding and showing themselves and each other that they bring unique perspectives that can be brought together to make a more effective workplace.
It's interesting to hear Toby draw clear distinctions between a diagnostic approach that's objective, scientific, or evidence-based, with a greater focus on quantitative data and a more problem-solving orientation, and a dialogic approach that looks at the shared reality that's examined through an engaged perspective, leveraging dialogue with a wider range of stakeholders to identify possibilities. As I reflected back on Toby's comments, I found myself increasingly focusing on how changes in the workforce and the workplace would benefit from such a dialogic approach, and especially how employees are increasingly seeking ways to engage with organizational change and to be a part of solutions. That's a point I picked up in a conversation with Tanya, another member of the University of Houston faculty, who teaches in the professional and executive HRD programs. Here's Tanya reflecting on changes in the workplace and how dialogic processes can help.
A lot of the problems that we have nowadays in organizations are very, very complex. If you think about the fact that nowadays we are working in environments that have a lot of diversity, have a lot of different viewpoints, different ways of being, different ways of seeing. We are also seeing workplaces now that have multiple generations. So completely different ways of thinking about the world. When you think about bringing in diversity, bringing in inclusion, you do want to give people voice. You do want to involve people in dialogue. Someone who has taken a dialogical D course in the executive program has had many opportunities to discuss this and see how you can leverage all of this uncertainty into creating something that is positive, making people understand that all this complexity can be channeled in a way of bringing in different perspective and trying to deal with problems that are too complex for someone that has an expert stance to deal with. Dialogical D really brings different perspective, multiple perspectives, approaches the problems that organizations have, the more complex problems, with a stance of not knowing. So you don't come in with the expert stance that diagnostic OD most cases have. Somebody who would come to do an intervention does have a lot of knowledge, would come in and would just invite a few people in the organization to give information. So it's lies via organization. You have an expectation that you would be able to capture the reality of organization life in a very objective manner. And then the consultant would be the one kind of proposing ideas, proposing solutions, proposing plans to be implemented. Dialogic approach, you step into organization with a stance that, you know, I don't really know what's happening here, but I would listen, I would observe, I would gather as much information as possible. I will invite multiple stakeholders, as many as I can. I would invite the disruption, you know, invite different stances, because I want to understand the multiple realities that exist in the organization. In a dialogic approach, you understand that there are multiple realities. There are different ways of viewing organization lives. There are different stances, and the organization exists in this meaning-making system. And you invite this diversity. You bring everybody to share their point of view, and you invite them also to think about paths that they want to see the organization taking in the future. So you invite that disruption. So someone who has had an opportunity to, in one of our courses, discuss all of the opportunities that involving multiple realities in dialogue can generate something positive for organizations, I think that is also a great skill to have.
As we heard there from Tanya, a dialogic approach aligns well with the complexities of the modern workplace and workforce. And it's easy to see how understanding dialogic organization development offers a tremendous benefit to leaders and to HRD professionals who can then engage employees to better understand challenges, create options, and gain ownership across the workforce. So in light of those benefits, let's hear again from Toby about how students learn about dialogic change as part of the Executive Masters.
What I've asked students to do in our class for one of our dialogic projects is simply to identify a person they can work with to first use strong dialogic skills on the listening and question asking side to understand two or three problems or issues that are pressing for a manager that they identify, and really trying to get their heads around what they're hearing. And noticing the little bit extra time taken to ask thoughtful and probing questions, leading to a deeper understanding of the situation that they're in. And then moving to ways to think about and to use some of the literature we have, as well as some outlines of different kinds of dialogic interventions, to think about what would be a good way forward. How is it that I might provide a few scenarios that line up nicely with what I'm hearing from the manager in terms of the challenge. So it's a different headset than I'm the expert, you know, here's where I'm going to stick the data thermometer, and then I'll go back to class we'll run some data and then give you a suggestion. Not that that's not also helpful, but I think they're experiencing a deeper understanding of the situations that they're exploring. Most of the students have a job where they, if they don't have a formal manager role, they've got a project responsibility or responsibilities where they really count on others. And so when they challenge themselves to show up to mention or to bring up topics that they just normally wouldn't attend to, or to just more often come back and talk about how actively listening and engaging made a big difference in terms of the way in which the work they're doing in our class, but more importantly, the work they're doing on the day-to-day basis. You know, one of the valuable things about doing this work as an instructor with the cohorts has been to watch them try things in between classes with each other, but also at work, and come back and talk about that. So what you see there is an expansion of their focus on change and changing mindsets, not necessarily looking at their being experts on how to change behavior as the only focus, but really asking questions about what do people think and how might I use myself as a skilled person and use the skills I have to expand that and to help others see their mindset through that process.
As Toby described there, students in the Executive Masters have an opportunity to learn about dialogic change and to then apply that learning into their day-to-day job as part of the experiential nature of the program. Students can then bring those experiences back into the classroom to discuss with faculty and fellow students, and so can grow stronger in their use of dialogic approaches. So we've now heard from a couple of faculty members about why dialogic change is included in the program, some of the benefits, and also how it's included in the program. Let's now hear from a student and also a graduate of the program about what it's like to learn about dialogic change and to then apply it in practice. To start off, let's hear from Souk, who's a current student in the Executive Masters. When I spoke with him, he told me about his initial skepticism about dialogic processes and how he then overcame those. Here's Souk.
It was kind of surprising to learn that there wasn't really any concrete steps to follow. Like, this is exactly what you do, and then this, and then this. It's almost just like a somewhat generic framework, but that's also kind of where the power is. It's not a canned response, you know, like choose your own adventure books, where you read through certain pages and you say, you have a couple decisions to make, you do this or you do this. It opens up the possibilities because there aren't predetermined paths. Organizations are comprised of individual people. The framework allows us to move through things together. I was definitely very skeptical of dialogic processes to begin with. It definitely took a lot of conscious effort on my part to just be open to possibilities, to just be more open to new ideas that challenge my understanding of the world. I think one of the activities that really kind of sold me was just an appreciative inquiry with one of our cohort members. We just talked to each other about our positions and some of the things that we had experienced. And then in just maybe like a 15 to 20 minute conversation with my partner, we were able to identify a really cool opportunity for her organization to improve. And so just to have that kind of revelation in such a short, you know, informal conversation, it was really cool. I mean, I was able to find something that she was doing well and that would benefit her, her organization. So I think just coming to that realization was natural because I was given the opportunity to kind of discover it for myself. So I did the activity. I kind of came to this conclusion that, oh, well, it seems like this is definitely a very powerful tool. So I don't think that anyone can be told that this is how you need to think. I think they need to provide opportunities to experience it for themselves, to really buy into it and then to understand it. The HRD program named this specific course Trends in OD for a reason. I mean, I think that dialogic change is becoming more and more prevalent, and I think it behooves us to at least understand and recognize the value that it brings. The world is always changing around us, and we need to adapt in order to thrive. The real world application is there. It exists. I'm not saying it's the only way, but it's definitely a very valuable tool that, when used effectively, can be really impactful.
It's interesting to hear from Souk about how a class activity opened his eyes to the power of dialogic change and helped him to overcome his initial skepticism, as well as see the potential impacts for HRD professionals and organizations as a whole. So if the Executive Master's Program gives students an understanding and the chance to learn and practice, and to then see the potential, it will be interesting to know how that translates into the daily work of a leader or an HRD professional. And that was the focus of my discussion with Jennifer, who graduated from the program in the summer of 2021 and now works at a global consulting firm headquartered in Seattle. Here's Jennifer.
I started with a new organization, and it's very different from everywhere that I've been in the past. I worked in higher education in the past, and so it was very rigid, and you had these strict systems, and I had that mindset of, this is how organizations are supposed to be. There's a way they should be structured. There's a way work should be done. And I came into an organization that really, like, I felt like I was flipped on my head. It was so different. We're all about autonomy and being agile and all of these totally new concepts. And I think that's really what helped drive this home for me, to understand that there's not one way to do things. There's not one way that organizations have to be, and that it is about that human aspect. And I think that that's really what enables us to be agile. And the organization that I'm in now is the people and the mindset. I have been out of the program, I think, less than a year, and I see so much every single day how that impacts me at work, how I'm able to take that with me, and also how I'm able to share this with other people, because it's not something that is studied in most programs. And so I now get to bring this and introduce this as a concept. It's changed the way that I look at kind of like how I approach everyday things and how I approach other people, how I have conversations with people. It has allowed me to understand how to bring people into that conversation. I'm not coming in and trying to force change on you. I'm not coming in and trying to change everything that you know and the way that you work, but how can I bring people into this conversation with me so that we all come to the best solution together? The advice that I would give is to start small. It's not just about these large scale change projects. It could be anything from me going to my team and saying, hey, the way that we do project intake, it doesn't seem to be working well for us. How can we rethink this, right? It can be those little things. And I think that's how you start the mindset shift. You start the conversation small and you work up to bigger. You know, if you've got a large scale change project and a company that's very resistant to change or has kind of these hard set mindsets, it can be really hard to say, like, here's this big old change that we have to take on, and I want to take a completely different approach to it, right? But if you start the conversation small and they start to understand what that looks like, then when you take it for a larger change project, maybe there's not quite as much resistance. And so I feel like that enhances the impact that I have at work too.
As Jennifer described there, learning about and then adopting dialogic processes has enabled her to approach change differently in her work, starting with small changes and working up to larger ones. And by doing that, she's learned how to bring people into conversations to reach solutions together, rather than to force change onto people. If you're like me, you'll have reached this point in the episode and be wondering why dialogic change isn't found more often in education programs. It feels like the challenges of the workforce and the workplace align so well with a dialogic perspective that embraces engaging employees to explore possibilities and find solutions. Yet there remains a steadfast focus on diagnostic approaches, which makes it feel like the University of Houston is ahead of the curve in the attention it gives to dialogic. Now's probably a good time to hear more from Shibu, who we met at the start of the episode. As a member of the advisory board and an HR leader working in practice, he's well placed to share an external perspective on the importance of dialogic processes and of covering them in the Executive Masters. Here's Shibu.
I think U of H actually is ahead of the curve on dialogic change. This is a newer concept, and many organizations are still trying to figure out solutions based on traditional organizational development models. What's happening is there's a dynamic and fast-paced change in the workplace, and this is creating challenges for leaders that fundamentally like a more structured, traditional way of solving problems. But I think what they're going to realize is over time, leaders will realize that it's going to take methods like dialogic change to keep up with the changing landscape. And the U of H students will be more versed, experienced, and will be able to steer organizations towards these new methods of creating, shaping, and providing solutions through different forms of conversations and connections. I know many organizations touch on dialogic change, but to the extent of what U of H does is it really takes a deeper dive in really explaining and getting into the depth of how an organization could be successful using the practices of dialogic change. So I think that's why U of H is going to be ahead of the curve, and the students that are taking these courses will truly understand and will be able to utilize it when the organizations finally adapt to these means and when they realize this is what's going to make them successful. I think many employees try to implement what they learn from books and their professors, but the key to dialogic change is really learning the art of connection. I think for organizations, for them to benefit is really one, the employee truly understanding what dialogic change is, but then the second piece of it is really learning that art of connection. This means practitioners have to be able to connect to diverse ideas, to diverse thoughts, to diverse people, and to diverse titles. So I think what we're actually saying from an organizational standpoint is not only do you have to learn what dialogic change is, but how to put that into practice is also extremely critical. And we're going to need and we're going to lean to schools to help us do that. The schools, the programs, the master's programs, they can teach the science of dialogic change, but organizations will allow for that sandbox for the learner to play in. So you almost need both sides of the equation to be successful at this. So you learn the science in the classroom, but the organization and your environment, your workplace will allow you to put this into practice. So over time, you sort of learn that art of connection. You're going to learn when you start to work with diverse individuals, diverse thoughts and ideas, because that really allows for you to sort of practice what you have learned. That's exactly the goal of the program. It's really to not only allow people to just learn in a classroom, but really learn in the work environment where you could take your daily realities and match it to what you're learning through the courses that you're in.
As we inch towards wrapping up our episode, I've saved one extract for the end that explores why leaders and HRD professionals should look for programs that include dialogic change. First, though, let's consider what we've learned about dialogic change and its focus in the Executive Masters in HRD. We've heard from faculty and advisory board members about how dialogic change differs from diagnostic change, about how it's covered in the program, and about what makes dialogic change so impactful. We've also heard from current and former students about what it's like to learn about dialogic change and then apply it in practice. Throughout, we've surfaced the potential that comes from adopting approaches that engage employees, bring them into conversations, invite them to join us in exploring possibilities and surfacing solutions. All of that aligns so well with complex challenges facing modern organizations. To close out our episode, let's hear from Dr. Consuelo Waite, Director of the Executive Masters. I asked Consuelo about why anyone considering a master's education should look for a program that includes dialogic change. Here's Consuelo.
Everything that organizations do today needs the dialogic perspective. If we're looking at leadership development, you cannot design a leadership development program without a dialogic component to that. in education. If you're teaching developing teachers or developing leaders or developing engineers, doing that without a dialogic perspective, then we are literally developing the technical individual and not the whole person. You know, I think that today the issues that organizations face, the fact that we employees have voice, if you have more people in your organization that are recognized and are given voice and are allowed to come in and be part of that emergent reality in very meaningful ways, the impact is the innovation, the continuity, the competitiveness. And we humans have that if you give us the opportunity to, but the folks that are leading, that are creating spaces, need to have an understanding of dialogic change to be able to help and facilitate and value the multiplicity of voices and realities that exist in their organizations. I personally was raised academically in a more planned diagnostic approach to change. That orientation made me always think about the organization as a machine. You know, we're going to fix this, we're going to create change, and we're going to align this, and you know, all the things that you think you have control over, and that you can go in and literally create change, and that it will work. And that's an important piece for anyone thinking about a graduate program. A reflection of how were you raised and what notions did you get about organizations? A lot of them, like mine, gave me a planned approach to an organization. And we talked about all the structures and, you know, the various systems and processes and all of that. That's a planned piece to it. But my awakening is that there is that, but day in, day out, there is a reality that's socially constructed. And I would say that reality is occurring every second in the organization, and humans are driving it. And they're driving it through language in use, through their conversations, through the narratives that are being triggered, retold in that organization. And for you as a professional to sit above that reality, for you to be able to interpret that reality is impactful, it's powerful, and it gives you a way to navigate. And so in the executive program, we heighten that awareness for you.
Thank you so much for joining me for this look at dialogic change within the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD. I want to thank my guests for the episode. You heard from Toby Egan, Jennifer Flores, Tania Neri Kosheve, Sukhs Ananakone, Shabu Verghese, and Consuelo Waite. I hope that their stories have encouraged you to reflect on your own experiences of change and the importance of engaging people in the change process. I'll be back next week with another episode when we'll focus on a different aspect of the content within the Executive Masters, that of data, and we'll ask, why is data important for leaders? Until then, this is Darren Short signing off from Executive HRD. Executive HRD is brought to you by the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD and is a production of allbypodcast.com.